This is 90.3 KEDM's Policy and a Pint. Tonight we're at Planters Gastro Pub in downtown Monroe, just above Restaurant Cotton. And we're talking about dating violence. And when we left, we've been talking about manipulating behaviors and things to look for. I want to ask our panel tonight a little bit more about what they do. Melanie Clark is with us. You're a sexual assault program coordinator. You're also a therapist at the Wellspring. So tell me quickly what the Wellspring is and what you guys do.
Well, the Wellspring itself is an umbrella agency, and we have several different programs. We have homeless services program, which also serves veterans through that program. We have Big Brothers Big Sisters. We have our domestic violence program, and we have a sexual assault program. We have a counseling center, which is where the sexual assault program is housed, and I work for the counseling center, and with our partnerships through the Family Justice Center, I also work at the Family Justice Center serving survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking, but I also do that at the counseling center as well.
So. I know Daryl is a deputy with the sheriff's office. You're not out on the street every day, you told me. What is your daily thing that you do as a deputy?
Well, I've got over 17 years in with the sheriff's office, and I've had 10 plus years with the domestic violence unit. The sheriff's office. Man, our officers are housed in the Family Justice Center.
Okay, Family Justice Center. And we've got Valerie Bowman with us, the director of the Family Justice Center. What do you guys do?
Well, the Family Justice Center is a one-stop shop for victims of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking. And so what we have is we have all the services that an individual would need underneath one roof. And this is important because this gives a victim the opportunity to come to one place where she can be safe, and she'll receive, or he will receive, confidential services right there. Takes a little bit of the issue out of going from place to place to get services. They can get them all there at one location, and it's easy and convenient for them. The services that we provide there is actually around about lots of services that an individual would need. We've tried to incorporate everything right there. But the main thing that individuals seek out is case management, and that is very, very important because case management, we actually provide them with safety planning and lethality assessment. As I spoke earlier, many times these individuals will leave and go back into the relationship, so it is very important that we take time to provide them with safety planning so that to keep them and if there's children involved safe if they go back into that relationship.
Crazy thing, I had a lady who moved in next door to me one time, and just, you know, you got a new neighbor. I went over there and said hi, and, you know, hey, why are you here? And she's like, I'm hiding out. I'm in an abusive relationship, and I'm from Florida, and this is my new home. And I'm just, you know, and I believe it was even a Wellspring deal that she was here taking part in some services that that you guys had offered. And she was there for about a year before she got everything kind of straightened out in her life and was able to move on. So I ask, how does someone break out of the cycle? For instance, this lady from Florida that came here hiding out, at some point she had to stand up and say, okay, it's time to bail out of this thing. How do you break out of the cycle? What's the first step?
I think the first step for anybody is realizing that they are actually in an abusive relationship. Many times people do not realize that they are in that relationship and that how bad it is. So first of all, they've got to realize that they are in the relationship and it's bad. And then they've got to make the decision, their own decision, to break that cycle. It can't be forced by someone else. They have to make the decision that, hey, I'm ready to get out. I don't want to live like this anymore. And they have to know that there's people out there to support them. And the Wellspring and the Family Justice Center does just that. They provide them with the services that they would need to get out of that relationship.
Melanie, let me ask you, I guess most people's first inclination is not, I'm going to bail out. It's probably, hey, maybe we need to go get some marriage counseling or some therapy if we're going to stay together. I guess in a dating world, you may not see quite as much of that, but is there a step before we get to the whole busting out part?
Well, right, like Valerie said earlier, it's a process. Mm-hmm. Anytime you want to make change, there are several steps in that process. So there are. People want to make things work. If they're invested in this relationship, they're going to try. You know, they want to see what they can do, what they might be able to do differently, what, you know, most of the the time people want to be able to say, I have tried everything I could from my end to make this work. And a lot of times they will stay until they feel like they've done that and then try to say, okay, well, this is not going to work, and try to move on from that point.
A question from Chip.
Is there a scenario where the abuser ever stops?
Is it possible? Sure. But it's up to them to make the change.
Are you aware that it's, I mean, how many times have you seen that?
I wish I could tell you a success story, but I can't think of one right now. Not saying there's not one, but I'm just, you know.
I will say that in our community, we have a batterer's intervention program that oftentimes is required by the court system if they've been abusers. And that program has seen success in the batterer changing their behavior. But as far as, you know, a specific story, I don't have that. But, you know, I do know that there are individuals that have gone through batterer's intervention programs, reconnected with the victim, and maybe even found somebody else and had successful relationships. So it can, but I don't, you know, directly I don't deal with batterers. So
I was going to say, too, a lot of times our behaviors are based on our beliefs. We behave according to what we think and what we believe. So batterers and abusers have certain belief systems that support their behaviors, whatever that looks like or whatever that means to them, whether it means you're my wife, I have papers on you, you're tied to me, you have to do these things, or this entitles me to behave in this way and to treat you this way, whatever their belief system is, that has to change before any kind of behavioral changes are going to happen on a lasting basis. So, and that takes time, that takes effort. Like Daryl said, they have to want to, they have to be subjected to a lot of challenges, which is what the batterer intervention program does. It challenges those belief systems as well as the behaviors to affect lasting change.
Yeah, admitting they have a problem.
Jake?
I was going to say, I've known people in abusive relationships, both emotionally and physically. What are some tactics that you as a friend, in terms of persuading that victim to get help? I understand it has to be their decision in order for it to stick, but what are some things that we can do as friends or family members or that sort of thing to be able to have that conversation?
I'd say keep being uplifting and give them support and advice they need, for starters.
Yeah, I would say definitely listen to them, but let them know that you're concerned about them and their safeties and their children's safety. That's very important. But be and listen, and don't turn your back on them. Because what happens if they're in that relationship and they've left and gone back, left and gone back, a lot of the people that have been there supporting them are like, I'm not dealing with this anymore. I keep telling you to get out. And, you know, when they need somebody, it's going to be supportive and listening. So just making sure that you're there, you're listening, letting them know that you're scared for their safety and that there is help out there.
Even if it's a dating relationship and we're talking emotional abuse rather than physical, I mean, how do you help convince somebody, okay, this guy's bad news or she's really bad news, you've got to end this?
Yeah. You may never convince them.
You may not. You're right.
Right.
You may not.
And he or she's going to defend them.
Yeah, just right. Keep doing that. Just keep on.
So persistence. Yeah. Persistence.
Keep telling them.
And just, I mean, sometimes you may ask questions, well, how do you feel when that happens? And, you know,
the
encourage
therapist.
Them to talk about how they feel, because if you can get them into, well, I don't really like it, or those kinds of things, and then you can just let them process and do the listening and the, you know, well, that doesn't sound like it's very good for you, or, you know, sometimes these things are very hurtful, and you can do a lot of reflecting what you see and what you hear so that you're not making a judgment, you're not giving advice, but it sounds like this, you're not really happy with that. You know, you can do a lot of those things and say, well, I don't think you really deserve that, you know, or let them know if they're questioning things, you know, that I don't think that was really your fault.
Right, and be able to take it from there. Okay, so part of the way that we choose topics for Policy in a Pint is looking at things that we can help affect positive change. Looking back on your experience in this field, can you talk about some things that are maybe different, or are there things that are getting better? Are there different things that are getting worse? What's changed, I guess, since you started doing the work that you do? And this goes for all three of you.
I would say that our community, and we're really, really excited about this, is that we've seen a 70% reduction in homicides in victims of domestic violence in our community. And so that's that, and we've maintained that. We've maintained that for 7 years. And so we are receiving a reduction, you know, in victims, actually people losing their lives. So that means that our community is holding batterers accountable, yes. And that means that we are supporting those victims and survivors. And that's ultimately how you make change in your community, is by supporting them and holding batterers accountable. If they know whenever they abuse that they're going to go to jail and they're going to have to go to batterers intervention and pay the fines and actually serve their time, then maybe they'll be a little less likely to do that in the future. But our community has seen great success. We've had a lot of success here, and a lot of it is because we do have the Safe Task Force that comes together to work to make changes in policies and procedures throughout all of our community to support victims.
I second Valerie on that, but I would say, as far as, you know, if you're going to say what's changed, not for the better, I would say technology. Technology is a useful tool for everybody. It's helpful, but it's also dangerous, and it sometimes makes our work harder.
So a question for our panel. I'm at KEDM. I'm the news director. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a law enforcement person. I don't know a whole bunch, but I can tell people the news every morning. I'm good at that. The question is, I come to ULM and suddenly they say, Corey, you're a mandatory reporter. What's a mandatory reporter? Because if somebody comes in and has a problem, I'm supposed to report that to someone at my, refer them to somebody else at ULM. How does that work in with you guys? And there are mandatory reporters like school teachers and things like that. So talk to me about those people and how they should deal and what they should do if somebody comes to them and says, hey, I'm getting abused every night.
Well, mandatory reporters include a large group of people, like you said, teachers, healthcare providers, counselors, advocates, a lot of different people on colleges and other settings. Anybody who is under the age of 18 is subject to, if they disclose things like sexual abuse or physical abuse or things like that, then they're, depending on who they're talking to, if they're talking to a mandated reporter, then that mandated reporter will have to report those things. On college campuses, you still have that with the minors. If you happen to have a 17-year-old freshman, you know, they may still fall under that. But also, like ULM and other federally funded colleges and universities have Clery Act and Title IX obligations to address things like sexual harassment, sexual abuse, dating violence, and domestic violence. There are certain people on campus, like counselors, that are confidential advisors, and students can go to those people confidentially and disclose those things other than the minors. If they're under 18, they still fall under that category. But they can talk about their options. They can find out what their options are criminally or through the school, because the school can do things to try to help them with their situation, whether it's changing classes or no contact orders on campus, if it's student-on-student abuse, things like that. So there are things that they can do, and they can talk to them confidentially about those. Other people are responsible employees or mandated reporters, and they have to report that, but the students should be informed. Sometimes they disclose and they say things before they can get told, I may have to report this. So then you just try to do the best you can to support them through that process and let them know what that process looks like.
Another question from the audience.
So we've talked a little bit about legal action. At what point can legal action effectively be taken? Is that threats or physical violence?
Both. Both. I mean, and simply just to put it like, say you get a text message and it says, you've done it, I'm on my way over to kill you. That, under Louisiana law, is defined as cyber stalking. Any electronic message, a threat of violence, that's cyber stalking. And of course, you got your physical violence too, which would just be, you know, actually striking somebody.
So do threats such as, I mean, the one you mentioned, the I'm going to kill you, do those have, I guess the best way to describe it would be at like an expiration date.
Statute of limitations?
Yes. Thank you. Yes, that's
what that's the legal term. I would have to get out the logbook and see. But I mean, the quicker you can report these things to law enforcement officials, the better off you are. Because if you let them sit there, it's going to make the officers look at it and go, well, this happened 2 months ago. Why is it just now important to you? The quicker, if you think it's genuine, the quicker you get it, you're reported. I don't want to say the more serious the officers will take it, but yeah, it'd be more serious.
I'll get final thoughts from our panel, and we'll talk just a second about resources available. Melanie Clark, I'll start with you. You're at the Wellspring. How do folks get a hold of you you guys if they say, I need a little extra help?
We have a 24-hour number that people can call 24/7 just to talk or to get information. They can call for counseling services if that's what they're interested in. And we provide services to survivors at no charge to support them through that process, whatever their goals may be.
And I'll ask you as well, Valerie, you're at the Family Justice Center. If folks want to pursue your help, where do they go and how do they contact you?
Well, if they want to, they can contact us at our crisis line, or they can also reach out to us at 620 Riverside, where services are available, and those services are free and confidential. We also have a website if they're just interested in learning some more information about the Family Justice Center. Getting on there, also the Wellsprings website to get more information about what services are out there and how to contact us.
Daryl Johns with the Ouachita Parish Sheriff's Office. Daryl, I guess anybody could pick up the phone and call 911. Is that what you do when something like this is going on, or is there another place that you turn?
It depends on the person's sense of emergency. If it's 911, if it's an emergency, if they can call the regular office line, 329-1200 for the sheriff's office, 329-2600 for Monroe Police, 323-96-2722 for West Monroe Police.
And there's a state hotline as well. What is the state hotline?
The state hotline is a domestic violence line that would reach whatever domestic violence program is closest to the individual, and that number is 1-888-411-1333, and it's operated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So anybody that might have some questions, or maybe they're just needing some information about how to get out or what they want to do, that line is available, and it rings all of the domestic violence programs in the state based on where they're located.
I'd like to thank our panel who have been with us tonight: Daryl Johns at the Sheriff's Office, Melanie Clark at the Wellspring, Valerie Bowman at the Family Justice Center. Thank you for being with us tonight. Thank you to our radio audience who is with us tonight as well. And again, don't hesitate to call any of those numbers if you need help in any situation. We also would like to thank the Planters just above Restaurant Cotton, 101 North Grand here, where we're at tonight, for hosting tonight's KEDM Policy in a Pint. And to find out more about Policy in a Pint, you can visit our website at kedm.org. I'm Corey Crow, and we hope you have a great evening. We'll tell you more about the next Policy in a Pint on our website, kedm.org.